Hello and welcome to the first edition of the Tell Me podcast. I'm Susie Godson. I'm a psychologist and the co-founder of Tell Me, multi-award winning mental health app for young people. We hear so much about mental health in the media. It's front page news all the time. What we don't hear is the stories of young people themselves. And that's what we're here to do today. We're going to be talking over the next 12 months to a series of young people who are going to open up about their own experiences of mental health and how they sought support and what helped them to get better. And we're joined today by Rona, who's going to tell us her story. Hi, Rona.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're delighted to have you. I guess the place to start is the beginning. So going back in time, you're 18 now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, when did you start to notice that things were feeling difficult or that you were struggling?
I think I started to struggle with mental health when I was around 12 years old. We had a few early problems with mental health in the community. There was a big suicide in my friendship group at 11 years old, my best friend. So that kind of started it all. When I was 11, I got kind of introduced to mental health issues very young. I think she was 10 at the time, very young. It made big headline news in Ireland, and she was my best friend. So I didn't really understand what was going on, and I think I didn't really understand until around 2 years later, around a year later. When I was 12 years old, I started to kind of see with social media more about mental health. There wasn't as many restrictions as well. You would see a lot of glamorization of mental health, especially on things like Tumblr. There was a lot of dangerous social media posts about self-harm, about different mental health topics, about eating disorders, glamorizing it. And I think that was my first interaction with like understanding what mental health was. I think I then started to feel sadness, feel overwhelming sadness, which I didn't really know how to handle. I struggled with bullying a lot. There was a lot of bullying in my school, and I wasn't very good at confronting it. Like, I would really hide behind myself and just go to the bathrooms and cry. And bullying was probably the first thing that made me feel like that no one cared about me, or that no one really cared about my experiences. And I didn't really have anyone to talk to. I was too scared to talk to anyone. When I was 13 years old was when I started to get into self-harming, which became quite a dangerous thing to start so young.
Wow. Can I just take you back a bit?
Yeah,
because you're only 13 at this point, and you've already experienced suicide, exposure to all sorts of harmful stuff on social media, and started to experiment with self-harm yourself. Mm. So you see a cumulative escalation from an experience with your best friend. What I want to know is who talked to you when that happened? Did you get any grief counselling? Did the school intervene? Was there any support for these primary school-aged children who had been exposed to something that is got to be one of the most traumatic things that can happen to a child?
I think so. My best friend wasn't actually in my school. She was my childhood best friend from a neighbor. She was my neighbor, and she moved back to Ireland. So I actually heard about it via the phone, and I went to school around a week after I found out. It was just after Christmas break, and I just broke down in school and started crying. And I got support from the school. I had counselling from the school counsellor, but it was pretty difficult because I was so young and they didn't really know how to handle such a situation. I think the support I got was more of feeling bad for me, and they didn't really know how to handle it. It was less of support, just for them not knowing how to handle such a situation, which made it more difficult for me because I felt like I was such, like, this is such a odd experience, and that they didn't know what to do with me, and that I was, like, they were scared of even doing the wrong thing.
So did that make you feel even more isolated in a way?
Yeah. It made me feel like I was the only one in the world to experience such a thing.
Wow.
And I felt like I was in that moment because we were so young and no one even really understood what mental health was. That was the first time I had ever heard of suicide.
So what you really needed was specialist bereavement support.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I only got that when I was 17 and 16.
And because your friend died in a different country, you weren't able to get any closure, go to the funeral, talk to her family?
Well, so they had their...
Wake.
Yeah, just kind of celebrating her life. And they had that in Switzerland.
Right.
So her whole family came here and we had the kind of after... drinks and, you know, stuff at our house. So it was...
They must have been so traumatised.
Yeah, going back to the place, it was very much
and
like...
And did they understand why it had happened in any... Did they have any clue?
So I think she was so young and she didn't understand... She didn't understand what she was feeling and she just kind of did what she heard about.
Right.
And their family actually now have a mental health support in Ireland, in Dublin.
Right.
So they're very much involved in mental health now, but it was a big struggle because it just happened so abruptly. She had struggled with mental health for around a year beforehand.
Right.
And they tried to get counselling, but in the UK or in Ireland, it's just a total mess. So she had to wait 6 months for a therapy session. Just wasn't in time.
Yeah.
So
you sort of struggled on for a few years, but were you attracted to those websites and places like Tumblr where they were talking about these issues because of what you'd experienced?
I think I was attracted to it because it was the only place that I felt like people were talking about it, but it wasn't positive conversation.
Right.
Now that I know now, what I know now, it was very triggering and it was romanticizing self-harm, eating disorders, depression. It was the only space at the time where young people could feel they had a place to relate to. In a dangerous sense, it informed me a lot about self-harm and made me feel like it was somehow normal.
Yeah.
It was something that you should do when you're struggling, that it does help. You know, it was very back in like 2014-15 time, that was what it was like. You know, there was no restrictions on social media. It was just, you saw everything. It was like a safe space for me at the time, which is really dangerous.
And I presume your family had no idea that you were doing all of this.
They were aware, because I actually did seek support in school quite early on, because after the suicide when I was 11, I had kind of weekly checkups throughout my final years of middle school, and I did speak about my thoughts of self-harm even before I had done it. I was like, I did speak about it, and my parents obviously had to be informed. But I kind of made it clear that I would never do it. It was just a thought. So my parents were always aware that there was problems going on. But I think I struggled as well because I was probably the first in my year to struggle with anything. And I felt really alone because all the teachers were panicking about me. It was this big panic, you know, and they were scared they were saying the wrong thing. And it just made me feel more.
Yeah.
Isolated.
It sounds as if there was a real vacuum when it came to knowledge, expertise and understanding in terms of how to deal with any of this stuff.
My story was being spread around the school to teachers, and the counselors and the principals were warning teachers, you know, be careful, you know, like, she's sensitive now. And that was I struggled with that because they treated me differently. They treated me with more sensitivity, but negatively. They were scared to say certain things, or they would always come to me and ask, you know, you need a minute. And I'm like, I'm just sitting here. I'm all right. Like, I need normal day-to-day life. And I didn't really have the opportunity to have that. They'd always take me out of class and, you know, talk to me and give me all this, do you need to talk? And I was like, actually, no. Right now, I just need to be with my friends and have a place where I can just forget and kind of relax. Because when I, like, everything was just surrounded, it became a personality, it became who I was.
So as well as making you feel different and possibly a bit isolated, all that attention might equally have made you feel a bit special.
Mm. The attention I liked in some ways, because I had never got that attention before. I enjoyed the attention, but I was also very scared of losing it, which was dangerous too. And I was scared of getting better because then I'd lose the attention.
That is a really important point that you make, and it is one that affects young people who've struggled with eating disorders, who've struggled with any sort of mental illness, and even young people who struggle with physical illness.
I think that aspect of my whole mental health journey followed me. The scared of losing attention and losing what I know, because that attention, that therapy, that support, that worry for me, it carried on throughout my whole mental health journey, and it just became the normal for me, and I became very attached to it.
And so getting better, there's the fear of the unknown. What happens then?
And if I lose everything, will people just forget about me if I get, quote unquote, better? You know, will that all be gone? And I was scared because I'm always scared of the unknown and of new things and changes, especially in my day-to-day life. And that fear followed me, and it made me not want to get better sometimes.
So do you think that the behaviours, such as the self-harm, that helps to compound them, that you you can't? Because we do see that in the app. People try to stop, but they can't let go of the behaviour.
Mm. I think for me as well, self-harm became something very addictive. It became very much an addiction, just like cigarettes. And I really struggled to just get it out of my day-to-day life. And I felt that self-harm was my way of the attention staying, but not really. It was just so physical and people were so scared of it. That's what the attention was on a lot of the time. And I felt that if I had stopped self-harming, it was the only thing that was physical and that other people could see. And I was scared if that went away, that people would think that I'm fine.
Did you try and hide the self-harm?
I was forced to, which was a real struggle. It made me feel even more isolated. So when I was around 14, every day at school, I had to wear a bandage on my arm. And it was bright yellow, and it was like a full cast. And my mum had to put it on every morning and take it off every evening. And it actually brought more attention to it. And I wasn't allowed to take it off anywhere, any day. Even if it was just scars, I had to cover everything up for other people. And I get it, but it made me feel very isolated and like I was some freak that I had to cover up and that I was ill and broken. It is a part of me, and having to hide that was a real struggle towards the end especially. And that's when I kind of spoke up and was like, I'm not doing this anymore. When I was around a year and a half ago, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. You know, like I will be sensitive to other people, but I am not actively going to wear a bright yellow bandage. It just brings way more attention, way more questions. And it made me feel really like an outsider. And I was like, you know what? This is it. Like, I'm not doing that.
So how was your relationship with your peer group going through all of this? What was your friends, your friendship group? Do they ask you questions?
What I really liked about my friendship group is they didn't ask questions. they never looked too much and they never brought attention to it. It was never for them who I was. They knew all of it. And when I would break down or have panic attacks, they'd be there for me, but we wouldn't talk about it the next week, you know. It was just, it was my safe space to kind of go and just forget about that. But they were there for me when I needed it, but they knew that I didn't want that to be who I was. And they never would ask about, you know, self-harm or look at my self-harm. It was just, I think as well, self-harm and that visual aspect was there so early on. It's just what they're used to. I mean, from 12 to now, it's just part of who I am, you know.
And so what began to change a year and a half ago?
My school didn't handle my mental health so well. And what I think a lot of people forget is in private schools, what I've seen in my private school and the international school, there was so much mental health problems. But I think the attitude was that the kids in the private school have everything they want, they need in life. So how can they have a mental health problem? You know, how can they be so depressed when they have everything? How can they want to die when they have everything? Or, you know, it was that kind of attitude. And what made me want to stand up to for the other students who didn't feel like they had a voice, I just became, for me, I'm so used to talking about my mental health, and it's something that I want to talk about, and a lot of people can't talk about it. And I stood up to the school and said that there needs to be some changes made, in the sense there needs to be a safe space where students can talk without feeling like their parents are going to be called, and a safe space where students can really be their self, you know. If they've just got some scars, don't make them cover them up and make them feel like it's such a big deal, and that, you know, people are going to be looking and scared of you, you know. It's just, so that's kind of what made me.
So do you think that by covering it up and trying to pretend that it wasn't happening, they effectively created a huge amount of anxiety around it, but everybody remained ignorant of what it was all about? Mm. And by being honest and confronting it, it allowed people to educate themselves, and it allowed people to begin to talk about it and to normalize it a bit.
Mm. I think everyone's seen an increase in, you know, self-harm in the past like 10 years of kids and students. And the more people talk about it now, and the more awareness there is, the less they feel alone. Because I felt so alone, like 8 years ago, 7 years ago, I felt like I was the only one in the world struggling with it. And the education that I seeked and found was dangerous. But that was the only information I could find, was people posting about their self-harm and posting about their sadness. Now that I look back, it was dangerous, but it was the only place that I could find something. And now opening up the conversation and making it not such a taboo has really helped people feel that they can ask questions. And that's what I tried to do when I created a club in school. I just wanted people to have a place where they could ask questions. They could ask questions about me if they wanted to. They could ask questions to their peers or just about themselves, and create a safe, fun, not a therapy place, just a fun place where they don't have to talk about their mental health, but they can. And it's an open space, because I think therapy has a problem of, it's this little room where you're forced to speak, and it's, you feel that the therapist doesn't actually want to help. It's just all this psychiatric talk being shouted at you and talked at you, and it's just coming out their mouth automatically, like they had it scripted before you even walked in. And
so it doesn't feel personal.
No, it doesn't. And it isn't a lot. I mean, it can be, but at the same time, they're getting paid to talk to you. And that was in my head a lot, even as a 15-year-old. I was like, you don't actually care. You're getting paid to talk to me, you know, like, So I think having that peer-on-peer support was so important.
How long ago did you discover the Tell Me app?
So I discovered the Tell Me app in 2018, in November. And I was told about it by a school counsellor. And this was at the time when I wasn't really talking to anyone my age about it. It was just therapists on therapists, you know, like 3 therapy sessions a week, school counselling sessions, medication, psychiatric appointments, you know. I had no one to relate to, and it was just all this professionalism being screamed at me. So my school counsellor recommended the app to me. I started using it around 2 weeks after I had downloaded it. I was too scared to open it first. I would just stare at it and be like, oh my goodness, because I'd never used an app before. I had never used any type of social media to seek support. And when I finally opened the app and made my account, I already felt pretty secure because it was anonymous, and that it made me feel secure and safe. Because a lot of the time, like, you don't feel safe talking, you don't have a safe space to talk. So I created the account and I just kind of scrolled through what people were saying to get a feel, to kind of understand. And I found a lot of people talking about issues that I thought that I was alone about. And just small issues, you know, even things like my skin, like, I was like, oh, I shouldn't talk about them because it's such a small issue, but it had such a big impact on me. And I saw that it had such a big impact on other people, you know, when I saw people posting about it and my feelings, that big impact was valid and I'm allowed to feel like that. And I was so shocked. The one thing I was so shocked by on Tell Me, there was no negativity. Like on apps, you see a lot of negativity, and it was just filled with support. And that was my first comfort. Like that comfort helped me, you know, get the confidence to make my first post. My first post was about having thoughts about suicide, and that got rejected, obviously. But I didn't understand that at first, you know. So I made around 3 posts. I was getting a hang of how the app worked. And the first 2 or 3 got rejected, but then I kind of got the hang of it and got the hang of how to write these messages. And I understood why they got rejected, because those words were triggering. But those were the types of posts that I saw 5 years ago on Tumblr and on Instagram, you know, using these triggering language, and that triggered me, you know? So it was the only thing I knew. And then I looked back and I was like, that actually could trigger someone, you know?
I should add that the Tell Me app is moderated, so every post and reply is checked, and we have a team of in-house counsellors who pick up high-risk posts. So the posts that Rona's talking about that got rejected were actually dealt with by an in-house counsellor. But it is a safe, very structured place where you can talk about very difficult things, and because it's moderated, you're never going to get bad advice, inaccurate advice, or unhelpful advice. And that allows young people just not to feel judged.
And what I really liked was I could take my time writing my post, even if it was 50 words, you know, 30 words, or however long, I could take my time and really think about what I wanted to say. And I did take my time, and it was amazing because, you know, Tell Me it's not a therapy session. There's not a stop and a start. I could just continue and stop whenever I wanted and come back to it. And there'd always be support there. It wasn't hourly. I didn't have to wait a week. I didn't have to wait 6 months, you know. It was the support was right there when I needed it.
When you compare that kind of casual, everyday peer support to the kind of therapy you were having from counsellors, how do you compare the two? Because it doesn't sound like therapy was terribly helpful for you.
I really felt like on the Tell Me app, people cared. And people were writing these off their free will, you know? They took their time after school, they get home, and they're not getting paid to write it. They're there for the same reason I am. And that support that I received made me want to support other people. Like every time someone replied to my post, it motivated me to reply to someone else's post. And it was just support on support, you know? And I really liked that. And in therapy, it was a very one-way thing. And it felt very forced. And I really like to build a connection with someone or just have it going both ways. And therapy was very much one way. And I just had to speak and blurt out everything and all my emotions in this 1 hour. And then the hour is done and that's it. And then I have to go back to my normal life. And for the app, it was, I could go on it when I'm walking. I can go on it when I'm at home. I can go on it in the school bathrooms, you know, whenever I needed it or felt like it was necessary, I could go on it. And I could just talk about whatever I wanted as well. Like sometimes it was more casual things, like speaking about what made me feel good. Because therapy can be a lot of negativity and talking about all this trauma. And a lot of the time I went on there and just spoke about how much like summer made me feel good and how I love my family. And, you know, that was just amazing. But I could also go on there and talk about deeper stuff, like, you know, what it's like being a woman who, a young girl in Switzerland and, you know, sexual assault. I could speak about depression. I could, but safely, you know, it was a safe space.
Did that give you a sense of being in control? So it gave you some agency over
for
the
sure.
process?
It made me feel like I could take my time because no one knew me and it was anonymous and there was no pressure. I could be 13 years old, I could be 24 years old, you know. It didn't change anything. There was no expectations outside of it. It's like, oh, but what about your homework? You know, it was just what I was writing is what was known about me.
Were you able to take what you learned from that experience into your peer group club that you started at school?
Oh, for sure. 100%. I mean, I even advertised the app to my peers in the club. I told them, I'm using this app. You should really try it. And what I learned from Tell Me was kind of, forget about everything else for a second. Just like focus on what you're saying. It doesn't matter if you have homework in a week, a homework due or an essay due, or like just focus on what you're saying now. And I really tried to bring that into my club and kind of be like, just forget about what's happening in school. You know, this is a place where you can just talk about what you want and forget about all the stress that's happening on the outside.
And how are you doing now?
I just came off around 2 months ago of 8 years of antidepressants.
Wow.
So I just,
amazing.
Thank you. So I just finished that and I'm doing a lot better now. I never thought I could be doing something like this or speaking about my mental health so openly. And I still have the Tell Me app on my phone. That hasn't left. And it's just, I don't need to use it all the time. Like, it's just there if I need it, you know? That safety feeling of it's just being, I can open it in 2 seconds if I want to, but I can also not. And it can just be there.
And you're off to Costa Rica?
Yeah, I am. I'm going to Costa Rica. Just applied to university. Got big aspirations, which is crazy to me because when I was 15, I remember a specific therapy session where my therapist was like, what do you want to do in the future? And I was like, I don't have a future. I don't think I'll be here in like 2-3 years, you know. I couldn't even see a month ahead. I didn't want to see a month ahead. And now it's like I have all these big things that I want to do and I have support behind me and I'm happy to do it alone as well, enjoying my own company. I think what I've learned is like a few years ago I really felt like I was the only one and there was no way of me getting out of it. And I do still struggle. The struggle's not gone. I mean, but it's just learning to be able to cope with that. And I still have therapy. I still have terrible, terrible days. But like I can like wake up and be like, you know what? Even if the next week's terrible, like I know it's not gonna last forever.